The Asian American community is one of the most diverse in the country. In 2023, there were nearly 25 million Asian Americans in the United States, making up about 7% of the population. And that number is up, with Asians being the fastest growing racial and ethnic demographic in the country. But within that, the histories, the lives, the cultures, they stretch across generations and across borders. This is What We Brought, a limited series from Illinois Public Media about the Asian American experience in Central Illinois, told through stories of resilience, adaptation, and identity. I'm your host, Neethi Shastri. In this series, we're diving into the stories about what we carry with us, whether it's memories, food, language, or even the echoes of trauma. You'll hear from Asian American voices of at least 7 different cultures and diasporas, each now calling Central Illinois their home. They'll share their stories, the journeys they took, the things they left behind, and, of course, what they brought with them. Today's episode features one of the most renowned and tranquil places on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign's campus, the Japan House. When you walk up to the Japan House on the southern tip of the university's campus, you're called to stroll through its twisting, winding paths that curve around through its gardens, filled with rustic stones, green bushes, and calming, tranquil water basins. Two unique gardens surround the house, a dry garden and a tea garden. Walking up to the white and brown building, you'll find a door nestled between bushes and bamboo logs with a wooden sign engraved in Japanese that reads Japan House and an English translation etched directly under. Founded in 1976 by the late Shōzō Sato, the Japan House is a cultural touchstone of Champaign. As a learning facility and part of the College of Fine and Applied Arts, they offer university students the chance to learn and partake in traditional tea ceremonies, experience Japanese culture, and practice ikebana, a Japanese art style of flower arranging, all things Sensei Shōzō Sato had mastered in his lifetime. It wouldn't be right to showcase Asian Americans in Central Illinois without bringing up the late, great Shōzō Sato. He died in 2025 at the age of 91, leaving a legacy of artistic accomplishments and cultural education in his wake. Born in 1933, his love for traditional Japanese art started at the age of 4, knowing he wanted to be an artist when he grew up. But in 1945, at the age of 11, he witnessed firsthand the horrors of war. Living in Osaka at the time, he watched as bombs fell from the sky upon the city and saw images of civilian suffering that stuck with him for the rest of his life. When his father, who was originally from Hiroshima, wanted to seek out any family who may have survived the first atomic bomb, Sato traveled back to the city with him, where they were met with nothing but rubble and ash. They camped in the ruins of Hiroshima for weeks after that, unknowingly being exposed to radiation from the bomb. According to a profile from the University Alumni Association titled Way of the Sensei, his story of surviving war and trauma led him, in many ways, directly to Central Illinois. He was dedicated to teaching students for a lifetime, after learning that the radiation exposure he faced had impacted his ability to have kids. In an interview from 2021, he shares that these experiences in his early life inspired him to want to create something peaceful. And that's exactly what he did when he came to the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, first as an artist in residence, and then as a professor. To learn more about his life, we have an archival Illinois Public Media interview by Illinois Pioneer host David Inge from 2014.
こんにちは。
Thank you very much for being with us.
This is a great honor to be back in this TV program.
I'd like to start out by talking a bit about your early life in Japan. You grew up during the war years,
yes,
and would have witnessed firsthand the destruction of the war. It seems that art offered a way out of all of that.
Yes, because of my personal interest from childhood is all about arts, performing art to the visual arts. And much later in my youth, late teen age, I become aware art is direct voice of people of that culture. And so if we can communicate with another nation and people of the nation, through art, we have a better understanding of each other. Then we can avoid another unnecessary war. And thus, I start studying Japanese traditional art seriously, though at that time I was student of oil painting in Western style.
Yeah. You've talked about the fact that at the end of the war, many people in Japan were looking outward in Western arts, and they were turning away from traditional Japanese arts.
That was very true. And many of my colleagues at the University of Fine Art speak of Paris and New York, and they know all about famous Western artists' history, personality, etc. But they don't know anything about tradition of Japanese culture and art, because their eyes are going out to the West. And even when I was studying oil paintings, that many of my colleagues said, you have to keep going on studying Western art. If you keep going back to traditional Japanese art, you are old hat, have to be on time of the movement of the culture. And so I was seriously studying Western art, and both performing art and visual art. And much as I studied, then I become aware of a big question mark. In Japanese art and performing art, we honor a certain element, but in the West, that's to be the weak spot. So that difference between, such as in Japanese painting, or even Chinese or Korean paintings, active empty space or active silence is a very, very important element in a composition. But in the West, if you have a canvas unpainted, having a raw canvas is no good. You have to cover entire canvas.
Yeah. And this is something you can see very dramatically in traditional ink painting, because
yes,
you have white paper, you have black
exactly
ink.
Exactly.
And there can, in fact, be a lot of white space in the picture.
Yes. So trying to bring in the viewer's thoughts into the white space to become one with creator and then viewer. And that is the strength of Asian culture. I'm saying Asian culture because I am Japanese background. Therefore, I cannot do Korean or Chinese arts well. And so I do Japanese art. But this is an example of Asian art because we all share the basic principles such as Buddhism, or Chinese ideograms to write, and rice culture, and all the lifestyle is very similar. So I'm using Japanese culture as example, Asian culture in this campus to introduce what is Asian minds and how they think and how they create and how they express.
You, I think from the point that you were really quite young, were very interested in art, in theater,
yes,
in putting in doing your own plays.
Yes.
I think that your mother actually took you to Kabuki
to the theater. Yes.
But your dad did not appreciate this.
No. He was a medical doctor and he was running the hospital. So he was hoping that I will become his successor. And yet when he come back home and see me wearing mother's kimono and dancing around like a kabuki, that's obviously very disturbing for my father.
Mm-hmm. There is a story that he said, well, but you can't go out and go play with the other guys. Go out there and roll around and fight with the other boys.
Yes.
And so
you remember
that. One time you actually did this. How did that turn out?
Well, so I said, I can beat up friends. So I went and then beat up one of my friends. And then my friend's parents come to our house and then bitterly complaining my violence to the student, the child of theirs. And from that point on, my father will not encourage me to go out and fight with others.
So was your mother, do you think, particularly important in getting you interested in arts?
Yes, she have a great interest and an influence over me in performing art. But the interesting enough that I did not meet my grandfather, but grandfather was known tea master, and actually he passed away through cancer and having very, very strong tea first thing in the morning. That's very bad for stomach. So that's what he did all his life. And tea ceremony is total art in a sense. From Japanese point of view, you have to have knowledge and training of architectural aspect, landscape design, and utensils, ceramics, and ironwares, and lacquerware, bambooware, all these things, as well as mannerism. And all this have to be mastered to become tea master. And that's really, I thought, a wonderful way to introduce Japanese way of life to this community. And that's the reason we created tea ceremony classes as well as the Japan House, where we can have authentic atmosphere. And so studying East and West, then sifting out what would be most effective subject to introduce Japanese culture and art, as an example of Asian culture and art, was a tea ceremony.
I would just like to go back to the moment when you came to the campus, and I know that you had a school in Japan where you taught traditional Japanese arts, and someone who happened to be a professor here was there at the school and said to you, what would you think about coming and being artist in residence? And I think because as we had talked, you said, well, young people in Japan, they wanted to go to the United States. So you said, yes, and you came. But it must have been strange because at that time, I can't imagine there were very many Asian people on this campus, actually.
In fact, during 1964, there was quite few science Japanese faculty and then his family. But I was the first one in humanity programs. And so I walk campus, especially slightly off the campus. And then I had to pump gas for my car. And then people, Oriental walking. They're pointed. Even in Green Street, I remember. So I said, Oriental don't fly, we walk too. You know, that's what I keep saying. And so that's why I thought we have to reach out to the general public to inform about Asian culture. And that's the reason we created Original Japan House.
So when you sit with your brush, you're going to do calligraphy or going to paint, or maybe you're thinking about doing a flower arrangement, or is that a spiritual exercise for you?
Yes. While you are arranging flower, you think it's a beautiful line of branches, beautiful color and form of flowers, and how you combining, and then think of active empty space and this mass color combination. While you're thinking of creating something beautiful, you do not think any evil thoughts, any basic desires or any of that. Just pure creativeness. Mm. And that's the way of art is the way of Buddha. That's the way I often explain. If you concentrate on creative activities, 100% put yourself in, and you are Buddha at that moment. Because in this case, Buddha means total purity of your soul.
I started out talking about the fact that you'd really had this lifelong goal to use art to promote greater understanding across cultures, and that you had hoped that you could communicate to people outside of Japan what the essence of Japan and Japanese culture was. And you have a strong feeling that's really a part of your personal identity.
Yes.
So is there one particular thing that you would say you would hope that people would come to understand about Japan?
Well, only thing I can say is that Japanese as a nation, a lot of people, and that people are the basically same as America or France or Germany. People are people. But core of group in the society go beyond the ordinary with this Zen philosophical understanding of how to concentrate, go beyond ordinary. This concentration, self-discipline, and I think this is the one, it's something unique to the world culture, I think. And that's why many of the industrial as well as the fine art, the unique creativity come from Japan because of this Zen way of self-discipline.
Sato spent the rest of his artist days in Northern California, but the Japan House carries on the Japanese traditions he fought to bring to America today. Stories of Fukushima, the journey of Seiran Chiba, was an event that was part of the current Koge exhibit at the Japan House, a series that showcases the traditional arts and crafts of Fukushima. Koge literally translates to traditional arts and crafts, and the style includes things such as paper mache, woodworking, textile creation, or in the case of the event I attended, calligraphy. I spoke with Seiran Chiba herself, a calligraphy artist from Fukushima, Japan, after the show.
私は東京都出身で2000年から福島県に移り住んで現在は書道家として活動しています。
I was born in Tokyo in year 2000. I moved to the prefecture of Fukushima and then I've been working as a professional calligrapher.
And do you mind telling us a little bit about your work? What connected you to Urbana-Champaign?
2012年に福島県で行われた芸術祭で、そこで大文字を書いていた時にとある男性に声をかけられて福島県から入り野に一緒に行きませんかと言われたことがきっかけです。
So the very beginning was 2012, 1 year after the disaster. She was at an art festival in Fukushima and an older gentleman happened to be an acquaintance of the professor emeritus Gunji Kimiko and he actually approached her and he saidWhy don't we go to Illinois, America, next year? That's how it all started.
The disaster they're referring to was partially the center of Chiba's exhibit. It was the Great East Japan Earthquake, a 9.0 magnitude earthquake, one of the most powerful in Japan's history. It struck near the northeast coast back in 2011.Following the earthquake was a massive tsunami that caused widespread destruction and set off a severe accident at a Fukushima nuclear power plant. In response to that disaster, Chiba taught calligraphy to adults and children living in temporary housing to help raise their spirits. What does your work say about resilience or the ability for people to bounce back, to keep fighting, to keep going in life, and especially for Japanese people to have hope for the future?
そうですね、例えば仮設住宅で書道を書いた時はみんな塞ぎ込んでしまっていたり、自分の家から出てこられない方がいたんですが、手を引かれるように書道の教室に来るようになって、どんどん笑顔が増えていって、自分が書いた文字を見て自分はまだ元気だって確認した時は本当に書道の力とそして人が持つ力を感じました。
So when I first started visiting the temporary housing, people, they were all really depressed and sad, and then many of them wouldn't even come out of their room. But then, they were really encouraged to attend her calligraphy classes. And then gradually, those people started opening up. And as they look at the writing that they made,They just realized, looking at their own work, they can still go on. They found the energy in themselves through calligraphy. So that's when she really felt that the power of calligraphy, power of people.
Seiran Chiba's work, using art to inspire and uplift those from Fukushima who have faced hardship, beautifully echoes the vision that Sensei Sato had when founding the Japan House. It's an artistic, powerful kind of piece that she cultivates, one that touches both the Japanese community and anybody who walks through the doors of that space. If you wander the gardens at the Japan House down the winding paths and the various greenery, you'll come across a small wooden gazebo called an azumaya. There, carved into the wood in both Japanese and English, is a simple line. The teacher and the student walk the same passage. That quote was chosen by actor Nick Offerman, a close friend of Sensei Sato's, as a tribute to him. And that sentiment of shared paths and learning still lives on in the work being done at the Japan House today through artists like Seiran Chiba, and it will continue to live on through all of life's turns as a quiet reminder of where we might go when we're looking for peace. Thanks for listening to What We Brought, a limited series from Illinois Public Media. I'm Neely Shastri. Our producers are myself, Arielle Ravenay, and Kulsum Khan. This podcast's editor is Arjun Tucker. Reginald Hardwick is Illinois Public Media's news director. Our cover art was designed by me, Neely Shastri, with help from Troy McDonald and Kulsum Khan. Distribution assistance also comes from Troy McDonald. In the next episode, we're going grocery shopping again, but this time at a South Asian grocery store. You'll find that episode online at will.illinois.edu or wherever you get your podcasts.